I was in all sorts of different environments, but the result kept ending up the same. There was only one constant. And it was me. I was like, oh, wait a minute, right? So yeah. I realized in that moment, I was the catalyst of every negative thing that was going on in my life. Whereas before, I thought I was a victim. I was always pointing the finger. And in that moment, I realized, wait a minute, dude, you're the only constant here. So you're playing a part in this. And that's when my eyes were open to, okay, if I am the one creating, I'm the catalyst to all these negative things in my life, does that mean I can be a catalyst to positive things in my life? The answer is yes. Where does that ability come from? And so I started this journey.
Welcome to the Learn It All podcast with your hosts, Learn It CEO, Damon Lemby, and SVP of Product, Darren Bridget. Our mission is to explore how continuous growth shapes the path to success. Our guests are high achievers who've learned there's always something new to discover. They'll share their stories, strategies, and insights with you. So whether you're a budding entrepreneur, a seasoned executive, an aspiring athlete, or simply someone who believes in the lifelong pursuit of knowledge, this podcast is for you. Join us now for the latest episode as we continue the Learn It All's journey through a world that never stops teaching.
Hello and welcome to the Learn It All podcast. We are Damon Lemby and Darren Bridget. Damon Lemby, CEO of Learn It, Darren Bridget, VP of Product at Learn It. And we are joined today by Glenn Lundy. Welcome, Glenn. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for having me. Super excited to be here.
Absolutely. But it's going to be a really exciting podcast. Let me give you a little bit of a tee up here, Glenn. Glenn is 25 years in the automotive industry, done some amazing things there, including founding the 800% Elite Automotive Club. This has informed Glenn's book that just came out not too long ago on the 12. It's the legacy titles, 12 Proven Principles to Grow Your Business 800%, written as a parable. Got another book that's also about five simple steps to an extraordinary life. He is the winner of the Great American Speak Off. He has a wildly popular morning show called Rise and Grind. He's an accomplished person with 8 kids and a bunch of other stories to share on the podcast. If you're interested in personal growth and development and professional growth and development, you're listening to the right podcast.
That guy sounds pretty cool, man. That guy you just described right there sounds awesome. I love it.
That's good. I wonder if I could get an introduction like that every morning. Instead of an alarm, just introduces you. Darren is an amazing.
Or maybe at the end of the day when I walk in the house, if you could come with me, Darren, and just give me an intro so all my kids know that this guy's kind of cool, man. He's done some pretty cool stuff. Maybe they respect me a little more. That'd be awesome.
Well, I think we should give that away, Damon. So it'll be like a gift. I'll announce guests or whoever. It's a raffle. I'll announce you when you walk into the house at the end of the day.
I love it.
Or maybe we should just have you call people in the morning, Darren. I know that Glenn says don't ever hit your snooze button. Maybe instead of an alarm clock, you just call and you give an introduction about somebody.
Yeah, I think that's good.
That'll get them out of bed.
I'll do it without warning. That'll make it a little weird.
I wonder if I can set up on the Alexa or on the Ring camera or something. Like somebody comes to your door, the Ring camera, it's like, you are at the house of Glenn Lundy, a college author who was done that. That would be amazing, man. Like, you could sell that. I would buy that. No, I would probably buy that.
There's a couple of things that I think we're teeing up right here that are sorely missed right now. One is positivity. Sometimes it just can be brutal out there in the world. There's a lot of negativity going on. And also humor. I was just reading today about what a tonic humor is to helping people succeed and grow, especially if they want to try new things in life. And speaking of new things, Glenn, here's our signature question we're going to hit you with. What is something new? Because we're all about learning here. What's something new that you would like to learn and get better at in the next 6 months or year?
Yeah. So two things along those lines. One, the drums. All right. I am learning. I actually just started learning to play the drums. I'm 46 years old. I've always felt like I'd be a good drummer. I don't know why. Yeah. Like I'm always just kind of banging on stuff. And for Christmas, my wife bought me a drum set. She surprised me, bought me a drum set this past Christmas. And so I'm investing 18 minutes a day in learning how to drum. And my hope is by next Christmas, I'll actually be able to play a song, maybe.
Yeah, that's great. Well, we'll have to have you back next Christmas so you can play the drums.
About a month ago, we had our in-person get-together with everybody from Learn It, and we brought in this guy I met up in Redding, California, Jeremy Schultz. Incredible story, a drummer to kick off our event, and he was awesome. He's got an awesome story, and he probably even does like virtual drum lessons. Either way, let's connect offline. You should connect with him. He's a great, great dude.
Yeah, I want to know that guy for sure. So I'm going to take a note on that. But that's one thing, and that's kind of a fun thing, Darren. The second thing I'll say to that question is I really want to learn in 2024, I really want to learn to let go of nearly everything that I believe to be true. And here's what I mean by that. In my 20s, I thought I knew everything, right? And in my 30s, I started to realize I do know a few things. And now I'm in my 40s and I'm realizing I know nothing.
Yeah.
Like I literally know nothing. In comparison to the amount of information that's out there, I know so little. And even the stuff that I do know, I want to question now. Do I know it because that was my experience, or do I know it because my kindergarten teacher told me it was so, right? Mrs. Sage told me that if you put salt on your food, you will die. She told me that when I was 5 years old, right? So here I am 46. I don't put salt on anything. 41 years later, I still don't put salt on anything because Mrs. Sage told me you put salt on your food, you will die. And how many things like that exist in our being, right? That because somebody said it was so, we believe it to be true, but maybe it's not.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I want to learn to let go of what I believe to be true and ask more questions and just seek to understand all perspectives on all things and gain knowledge through experience, not through historical context, if that makes sense.
I love it. It's a remarkable goal and it showcases wisdom. In fact, it almost takes wisdom to recognize that that's wisdom, because that's a thing, right? As you get to that whole idea of you really know a lot when you realize how much you don't know. And also questioning what it's based on. It's like that. Speaking of parables, we'll get into parables with your book in a little bit. But I think it's that one about the pot roast and the mom cuts the ends off the pot.
John Maxwell. Yeah,
and I know this story very well. Cutting the ends off the pot roast afterwards. They don't know why. It was because she needed to do it to fit in the pan. So it no longer applied, but people still did the same thing.
Did you pull that story from my book?
No, is that in your book?
I share that story in the book, in the legacy titles.
Yeah, it's a good one.
I heard that from John Maxwell many years ago, and it actually made it in the book. So that's awesome that you pulled that story.
I came across it because my wife called me out for cutting the ends off potatoes. Not quite the same thing. But and she said, why do you do this? Because my mom does it. But why does she do it? So, I don't know. And I asked my mom, she didn't know either. We cut the ends off potatoes for no reason whatsoever. There's not even a pan. There's not even a pan involved. It's just weird. Who knows? So
it's just what you've done.
This is what we've done. Would you share with the listeners a little bit of your story? Because you've had a pretty remarkable story to get to this place of success and wisdom. And I would even say some humility based on what you just told us. So yeah, give us a little background on how you ended up to being the person you are today.
Yeah, you know, I've got two seasons of my life. I tell people I probably have way more seasons than that, but two huge. There's the BC and the AD, right? Seasons of my life. And so, you know, now, yes, it's kind of cool, but I've written a couple books, which is neat. And I own my own company. I work with owners and general managers of car dealerships all over North America, speak on stages all over the place. I have an amazing wife and 8 beautiful kids. We live here in Kentucky and, you know, life is pretty darn good. And on top of that, I also am an ex-con. I've been to jail 17 different times in my life.
Wow.
You know, I've battled with different addictions at different seasons of my life. I was homeless for a season of my life, battled depression, suicidal thoughts, attempted to take my own life. Back about 15, 16 years ago, I guess that was. And so, you know, now sitting before you is a tale of two existences. And I spent probably the first 30 years of my life in an existence that was very Darwinistic. I was an atheist. I didn't believe in anything spiritual, and it was all physical. You know, if it looks good and it feels good, the answer is yes. And if I could get over on you, I'd get over on you. And if I had to lie, cheat, and steal, it didn't matter. It was dog eat dog, survival of the fittest, that type of thing. And I lived life like that for a very long time, man, for a very long time. But then after, you know, kind of a homeless season and then a depression and a suicide attempt, I was brought to a new experience, which added a spiritual element to life, realizing that we are mind, body, and spirit, not just mind and body. And the way that was brought to me, Darren, is it was literally delivered in a sentence. I tried to drown myself in the Pacific Ocean, and I was plucked out of the ocean, laying on the beach, looking up at the stars after this horrific moment. And I heard, whether you call it audibly, mentally, whatever, right? The communication line was, you take yourself wherever you go. And in that one sentence, I flashed back on the last 30 years of my life, and I realized that I had lived in multiple different cities. I had all kinds of different friend circles. I had all kinds of different jobs. I was in all sorts of different environments, but the result kept ending up the same.
Yeah.
There was only one constant, and it was me. I was like, oh, wait a minute, right? So yeah. I realized in that moment, I was the catalyst of every negative thing that was going on in my life. Whereas before, I thought I was a victim to racism, to favoritism, to opportunities, to not having opportunities. I was always pointing the finger. And in that moment, I realized, wait a minute, dude, you're the only constant here. So you're playing a part in this. And that's when my eyes were open to, okay, if I am the one creating, I'm the catalyst to all these negative things in my life, does that mean I can be a catalyst to positive things in my life? Mm-hmm. If the answer is yes, where does that ability come from? Mm-hmm. And so I started this journey of how do we have the ability to create? And where does that come from? And that took me on a spiritual journey. I studied Buddhism, Catholicism. I studied all kinds of different religions, ultimately connected spiritually and found spiritual understanding through Jesus and Christianity. And then that led me to more self-development. I started listening to Les Browns and Eric Thomas's and Jim Rohn's and Tony Robbins and John Maxwell and Napoleon Hill, and started digging into all these different books and, you know, so on and so forth. And so I've just been on this journey of self-discovery for the last 15 years, trying to figure out where this ability to create comes from and how do we apply it and hone it in and execute on it. And literally the results have been night and day, living one way, ending up on a beach, homeless and suicidal, and now living another way where I've got a couple books and some cool stages and some great kids. So that's 46 years wrapped into.
Yeah. And with a really interesting, I mean, thank you for sharing the beginning. I want to follow up on this real quick, if you don't mind, damn it. Because my own father had a similar journey, but he didn't make it, homeless and in jail and drugs and everything. So I think what people sometimes don't understand is it wasn't like for you, the sentence showed up, the light went off, and then it was like a perfectly straight line progression. I'm sure you had dips. How did you find your way when you dipped down to getting back to that basically upward trajectory? And it probably was a few things, right? But can you give us an example of like, okay, things have gone horribly for me. I want to make a change. I want to be a catalyst for good in my life. But I'm going to have some obstacles again. What are the kinds of things that helped you maintain course?
Yeah. So full on understanding that it's going to be a two steps backwards, one step forward type deal, right? It's not two steps forward, one step back. It's two steps back and one step forward is definitely how that path went. I knew I had to change my environment. I had to get into a different environment. If I was going to become something new, I could not hold on to the things that made me feel safe and comfortable and so on and so forth. So I literally moved all the way across the country, right? I moved to Kentucky. I had $1,500 cash and a suitcase. I knew one guy that I had barely met, like traveling through 4 months before, you know, bad credit, warrants out for my arrest, all of that stuff. But I knew I had to get into a new environment. So the environment was a big part of it. also changing my mindset from if it looks good and it feels good, the answer is yes, to if it looks good and it feels good and it is good. Like adding that little extra piece caused me to change my behaviors drastically, right? When you start to think, is this action good, not just for me, but for others, right? You start to include others in your decisions. It just changed everything for me anyway. It, you know, if I'm going to go do drugs, how does that affect not just me? Because, you know, for me, it's going to be, I'm going to be high and maybe I'm going to have a blast that day and I'll regret it, whatever, in the future. But how does that affect this child that I've now got? How does this affect my mom? How does this affect my employer? How does this affect the people that believe in me, that love me, that trust me? How does it affect them? And adding that extra layers of how does my decisions affect others is really what kept me bouncing back. There were plenty of setbacks, but they weren't as drastic or dramatic as they used to be because I had that new experience of thinking about others as I was making decisions.
Those are great examples. The environment, the importance of purpose, and environment is huge. I don't know if people don't realize this, but like you do. I mean, and it's painful because you got to say goodbye to some things that are comfortable in some relationships potentially, and then being in service of others and doing stuff for purpose. And I imagine too, you were able to keep working with yourself even if you took two steps backwards. You didn't give up on yourself.
Yeah, you know, there was nothing. There's nothing worse than when I was homeless. People think homelessness sucks because you don't have a roof over your head or a place to lay, you know, lay down or whatever. But really, homelessness sucks because you become invisible, right? People won't make eye contact with you. They're afraid you're going to ask them for money or whatever. So people will look above you and below you, left of you, right of you, but they won't look at you, man. And you just become super invisible. And so as I had setbacks along the way, post that experience, I could just always refer back and go, at least I'm seen, man. At least there's people that are saying my name, you know? It's bad, but it ain't that bad. Like, and so having that reference point makes it a lot easier. You know, I fail through a lot of things now. And as long as I got a roof over my head and there's people in my life that see me, I know I can recover from just about anything.
So Glenn, amazing story, obviously. What advice would you give to somebody? Let's say maybe they're not homeless, but maybe they recently lost their job, or, you know, I work with a lot of athletes who careers ended and they feel like they've lost their identity. What advice do you give them as far as what is the first step that they should go on in their new journey? Because sometimes it's really overwhelming to look at the whole picture. But what is your advice for the first step that would help them get them on a new track?
The simplest things to do are also the simplest things not to do, right? So to anyone in any situation where they're looking to elevate, evolve, grow, go to a new level, a new stage, whatever, I tell everyone, if you change the way you start your day, it'll make a massive impact in your life. Period, hands down, it all starts in the morning. And there's a lot of data behind this. And every successful person that I've studied will tell you the same thing. They've all got some sort of powerful morning routine. And that's what it was for me. It was, okay, I got to change the way I start my day. So I was studying all these different successful people, and they all have their own way of tapping into mind, body, and spirit. Beyonce, you know, and it's not even like a Hal Elrod, you have to get up at 5 a.m. club type thing. Like Beyonce usually does shows till, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning, and then there's after parties. She didn't even go to bed till 6 o'clock in the morning. So telling somebody like Beyonce she's got to get up at 5 a.m., it doesn't work. But what does she do when she gets up at 2 in the afternoon? She spends the first 2 hours on mind, body, and spirit, right? So the time doesn't matter. I don't care if you work graveyard shifts. I don't care, whatever. It's what you do in that first hour to 2 hours of the day that changes and transforms everything. Literally everything. So I was studying all these different people and they're like, oh yeah, you got to take cold showers in the morning. So I did the cold shower thing. And I was like, bro, this ain't for me, man. I don't like this cold shower thing at all. I am a tropical people. I like heat. I don't like cold. I'm not doing it. But then I saw read someone else and they said, you got to write down your gratitudes. And I'm like, well, I can do that. I can at least write down a few things that I'm grateful for every morning. And then I came across Mel Robbins, and Mel Robbins was, she started helping me understand the science behind the snooze button and how that snooze button is the devil, man. It's the worst possible thing that you can do in your life is hit that snooze button. So I'm like, all right, let's not do a snooze, right? And so I created the Morning Five by testing out all these different things. And so what I would challenge anybody listening to this, they're like, man, I want to shift. I want to evolve. I want things to change. I would challenge them to attack the morning ferociously in a way that taps into mind, body, and spirit that works for you. And if you need a simple guideline, start with no snooze, no phone, gratitude and goals, take care of the physical, and send out an encouraging message. That's five real easy things you can do. But maybe for you, it's yoga or meditation. Maybe you need to spend some time in your Bible. My wife spends an hour in the Bible every single morning. That's her jam. If she doesn't do it, her whole day is thrown off. So for everybody, it's a little different, but for everyone, it's also the same. The science shows that if you tap into mind, body, spirit first thing every morning with a consistent morning routine, it will transform your life. It'll transform every aspect of your life. So that's what I would say, Damon, is they just got to change the way they start their day.
I love it. Just out of curiosity, why is hitting the snooze button so bad?
Yeah, there's so tons of science. So we sleep and have for thousands of years, we sleep in cycles. Our cycles go from light sleep to REM sleep to deep sleep, back to REM, and then back to light. Now, the reason we slept like that, or we've slept like that for thousands of years as humans, is it doesn't make sense to go into a coma for 8 hours a day. It's not safe. Before ADT security systems and Ring cameras, you were saber-toothed tigers would come eat you in the middle of the night. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, so yeah. I'm exaggerating, but it wasn't safe. And so we sleep in these cycles, and it's called a sleep cycle. And everybody's sleep cycles are usually between about 2 to 3 hours per sleep cycle, from light to REM to deep to REM to light. Mm-hmm. As you create your patterns and behaviors, most of us go to bed roughly the same time. Every night we get up roughly the same time in the morning. Your body adjusts the sleep cycles to where your alarm, if your alarm is set for 6 a.m., 7 a.m., 8 a.m., 9 a.m., whatever time it's set for, you're going to be in light sleep right before your alarm goes off. This is why my guess is, Damon, you've woken up many times a minute before your alarm goes off, right? Or 2 minutes before the alarm goes off.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're in this light sleep cycle, and then here's what we do. The alarm goes off, and then the devil kicks in, and the devil says, and I call it the devil because it's a straight-up liar, says, hey, if you sleep for 8 more minutes, 6 more minutes, 9 more minutes, whatever you have your snooze set for, if you sleep for that much longer, you'll feel more rested. That's the lie that it tells us. And nobody's ever done it. It's never happened. No one's ever hit a snooze button, slept for 9 minutes, and then went, yes, now I feel amazing. It's never happened. Right? It's just a freaking lie. Because here's what happens is you're in light sleep. You hit snooze. Your body immediately goes into the next sleep cycle, which is light to REM to deep to REM to light. It's about a 2-hour cycle. You are going to go through that cycle, whether you are up walking around or laying in the bed. Your brain is still going to go through that cycle. So this is why people are pouring coffee down their throat first thing in the morning and energy drinks and all this stuff, because they're mid-cycle and they're trying to function. They're trying to get going. But the brain is going, no, dude, we're supposed to be getting some restorative sleep right here. So by not hitting the snooze button, you're in light sleep. You wake up. You don't go into the next cycle and you're ready to fully function and attack the day. If you hit the snooze, you trigger the next cycle, which is going to cause you to be lethargic for the next hour and a half to 2.5 hours.
That's awesome.
That's great.
Let me ask you something on the flip side, and this is more of a selfish thing because you have 8 kids. On the flip side, how do I get my 2-year-old and 6-year-old to bed?
Yeah. So how do you get your 2 and 6 year old to bed? Well, it depends on what you want that to look like for you. The way that we got our kids to bed earlier in life is they just slept with us, man. I've had kids in my bed for years. We just got the final kid out of our bed January 1st. We drew a line in the sand. Caroline's 3 years old. I've had kids in my bed for 14 years. So for us, it was just let them sleep in the bed with us.
I'm totally fine with that. I love it when they come on in. It's top of mind because I had my 2-year-old was doing head dives off the couch at, 8:30 p.m. last night.
So. Yeah, that's
now,
right.
I will also say now that we have so many kids, my wife and I go to bed when it's time for us to go to bed. And we hope that the rest of the house survives. And we hope that they go to bed and we hope they make good decisions. But if they don't, we don't know because we just go to bed. And it's funny because my 3-year-old sometimes will get up, we'll go to bed. And or this is before 3 months ago when she was still in bed with us. We'd go to bed. She's like, I'm not ready to go to bed yet. We're like, cool, get out. And we just let the 3-year-old go roaming the house, man. And she'd go into her brothers and sisters' rooms and wake people up and grab a bag of chips. Yeah. It's not as serious as people think it is. This whole parenting thing, I'm learning that we can influence and we can share wisdom. We can impart in them. We can guide them the best that we can. But they're going to grow up and they're going to do what they're going to do. And they're going to take what they're going to take and not take what they're not going to take. They're resilient little sons of guns. They can figure a lot of stuff out. And so we used to take ourselves very seriously. My wife used to make organic food and all this stuff, dude. And now we're just like, survival of the fittest, man. Figure it out. If you got questions, let us know.
My parents were half the charge, right? Because they had 4 kids. But my mom says the same thing. She said, this was the 70s. We didn't know. We just threw you guys in there and we led by example. And you guys all turned out all right. Stop taking yourself so serious. Just be there, be engaged, and your kids will be okay.
Yeah, they'll be all right, man. They'll be all right. And there really are some opportunities, Damon. I'll share this story with you. We do have a lot of power as parents, just like Mrs. Sage told me when I was 6 years old not to put salt on my food and how that impacted me. I realized we have this little power, so we can do some fun stuff. So my son, Joel, when he was 5 years old, he decided to play with a wasp nest on the playset. And he played with a wasp nest and he got stung on his left hand by 5 wasps, big welts. His whole hand was swelled up. He's crying. He's upset. And he comes into the house and we're freaking out. His mom's got him, so on and so forth. And he's sitting on the counter and I looked him straight in the eye and I said, Joel, thank you. He kind of looked at me and I said, thank you for finding that wasp nest to make sure that your sisters don't get stung because they couldn't handle it, but you can handle it. So thanks for finding the wasp nest. So I turned him into a superhero instead of a victim, right?
Awesome.
Fast forward, he's 12 years old now, going on 12 years old now. This kid, he catches mice with his bare hands. He lets spiders walk all over him. We'll be at the park, dude. A wasp will land on his hand. He'll play with the wasp or play with bees. Zero fear. He's the hero of the house. He's always protecting his sisters. And it was all from that one moment when he was 5, just planting this seed that what could have been a tragic, traumatic moment that made him fearful of everything. Instead, we turned it into a heroic moment where now he's got this power, man. It's almost like a superpower. So I'll just give you that. Since you've got 2 and 6 year olds, whenever they're in a traumatic situation, you have opportunities to plant seeds of growth and heroism in them that will show up much, much, much later in the years.
I appreciate it. That's great, great insights there. It's helping build the confidence for them is something.
Yeah.
Really important.
It's kind of a theme for you that I think maybe can get us into the legacy titles work that you did, which is the stories you tell yourself, how you frame something. And that's an example of how you choose to tell that story of the wasps landing on you. And you're kind of showing a path forward to make it, well, like turn it into something that's purposeful and valuable. Cause that's also true. You mean you could also say it's like, I'm super unlucky. I just got stung by 5 wasps. It's also true that you found the wasp's nest. And so now we know where it is and other people won't run into it. this idea of the language that you use and sort of the way you tell your stories, I think is an important theme. And is this in your book, Legacy Titles? Can you talk about these, this parable that you wrote?
Yeah. So in the book, we definitely talk about the language. Like one specific thing that we cite in there is changing the word spend, getting rid of the word spend out of your vocabulary and replacing it with the word invest.
Yeah.
Right. So if you think about, here's how this happened is I was having a conversation with a guy, very successful guy. And he said, man, I'm going to invest in this stock. And I could see his eyes salivating like, oh yeah, I'm going to get a return on my investment. And in the same conversation, he said he was going to invest in his business. And I could see he was so excited that he was going to get a return. And then he talked about investing in himself, going to a conference and what he was going to get out of it, right? And then in the exact same conversation, he said, oh yeah, and I'm going to spend some time with my kids.
Yeah.
And I'm going to spend time on vacation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And when he said spend, the energy was deficit. Yeah. When he said invest, the energy was ROI, positive. And it hit me like a ton of bricks. I was like, oh, wait a minute. If we go into everything as an investment with an expectation of an ROI, our energy is different and our actions are different. So if I'm going to spend time with my kids, that's a deficit. Spend is a negative. It's a minus. We're not going to get anything out of it. If I invest time with my kids, now I'm seeking an ROI. And what I found is I don't actually have to invest as much time as I thought with some of the kids in order to get that ROI. Willow, my now 10-year-old, she doesn't really want to hang out with dad a whole lot, but when she needs your attention, she needs it now. Saying, oh, I'm on the phone, hold on, all that stuff doesn't work with her. But if you invest 5 minutes of focus, eye to eye, I hear you, I see you, dude, she's good. She'll give you a big old hug. She'll tell you she loves you. She'll leave you alone for a week. That's all she needs. Now, my son requires a different investment. We go fishing together and I help him with his soccer. And I can tell when he's starting to drift. And, you know, it's not working that, hey, I need to invest a little more time. Same thing in my business. There's certain areas of my business that if I invest the right amount of time, I get a return. The business explodes. Whereas if I just am spending time doing stuff, the business doesn't, it doesn't move. It doesn't move at all. Social media. Don't spend time on social media. Invest time in social media. Well, what does that mean? Well, it means that I'm going to get a return. So I need to comment on other people's stuff. I need to respond to people's comments on my stuff. Instead of just scrolling, which is spending time, instead, let's invest. Let's build a relationship. Let's network. Let's connect. And so we talk about this in the book. Shifting that word spend to invest in itself is profound in so many ways at home, at work, in our lives, et cetera, et cetera. And a lot of this, Darren, came from just lots of research and videos and so on and so forth. But one specific book, The Liberty of Our Language Revealed. It's an incredible book. It's called The Liberty of Our Language Revealed. Mm-hmm. And in that book, Thomas Blackwell, who I had the opportunity to meet and do some speaking stuff with, he shares the science behind you can freeze water. And if you talk to water with negative words and then talk to water with positive words as it's freezing, the one that you talk to positively will make these beautiful crystals. And the one that you talk to negatively will make these ugly shards of ice. It's fascinating. And we're made up of 85% water, man. So if words will affect a glass of water, how much do they affect our lives?
It's huge, right?
So yeah, we talk about that in the Legacy Titles. It's super important. It's been a game changer for me. And hopefully you guys find that valuable too. And start investing instead of spending. Invest your money, invest your time, invest your energy. Don't spend.
It's a great example of one of the revelations in the book. And the book, you wrote it like a parable. It's like the book itself is like a story, kind of, right?
It is.
Walk through how you did that. And I think it's as a learning and development organization, we're always looking for ways like how do you make learning sticky and impactful? And writing your books just as, instead of here's all these bullet points to remember, but showcasing as a story, it becomes a more captivating, interesting way to absorb it, I would think. But let's hear your thoughts on it.
Well, here's the thing. I didn't tell you guys this at the very beginning of the talk. We had to build a relationship first. But yeah. I just need you guys to know that I am a cheater. I cheat. I try to find if somebody else is doing it and it works, yeah. Bro. I'm a copycat. I am a copycat and son of a gun, man. Yeah. I really am. And so I can tell that to you guys now because we have a good relationship. But I look at successful humans in history and I try to emulate some of the things that they've done. And as far as I can tell, so far, the best-selling book of all time is this thing called the Bible. And it's the story of this guy named Jesus. And whether religious, not religious, doesn't matter. The math is the math, right? It's like 1.4 billion copies of the Bible have been distributed. Next closest to him is the Harry Potter series at like 700 million, right? So J.K. Rowling's doing some good stuff too. But I look at that and I'm like, okay, so this is the most successful, most well-known. Our clocks, our timeline, what year it is all based on the story of this guy's life and how he lived it. And so I study him and how did this one dude in 3 years create a multi-generational impact that has influenced every aspect of humanity today? How did he do it? And when you look, dude, he just went and told stories, man. The most amazing, inspiring stories. And when he was talking to sheep herders, he talked about the herds of sheep. And when he was talking to farmers, he talked about farms. And when he talked about when he talked to tax collectors, he referenced tax collectors. He talked to people in a way that they could understand what the heck he was talking about. And so it finally hit me because I sat on this book for 5 years trying to figure out how to deliver it. And it finally hit me, dude, I'll just cheat and copy what that Jesus guy did. And I'll just tell it as a story and I'll use references that the ideal avatar can associate with. And in doing so, we were able to create this parable, the legacy titles, 12 proven principles to scale your business 800%. And then at the bottom of the book, it says a parable for success. Yeah. 4 words. It's a parable for success. And so people can read it and it's a story and you can connect with Alfred because he's one of the characters and you can connect with Doreen because that's Alfred's little person. And he follows the hero's journey where he's got a revelation and he wants to try something new. And he goes on this whole journey and he applies all these things and there's magic and wizard. It's cool. And in the end, he ends up right back where he was in the beginning, but everything's different. And that's really the hero's journey in a nutshell is... I don't know if you guys know what I'm referring to. Hero's journey.
100%. Joseph Campbell. Yeah.
Every Disney movie, it's all the hero's journey, right? We start in one place and we wish we had something different. We go on this whole epic deal and then we end up back where we started, but now everything's different.
Yeah, sure.
That's how the story, that's how the legacy titles is, man. And it's fun to write and we're getting some great feedback. People are sharing with me, take different takeaways and so on and so forth. So it's been super cool writing it this way.
I don't think it's cheating though, Glenn. One of the things that I say to my team, to my family and everything is you don't need to reinvent the wheel all the time. And sometimes just having the humility to see what already exists and learn from what's out there and improve upon it or be vulnerable and ask questions and maybe formulate it and change it to your liking is one of the best ways to go. And because everything has pretty much already been done. So you don't need to recreate the wheel. You can just improve upon it. And I'm not saying improve upon the Bible, but what I'm saying is you could make it yours by going in that direction.
Yeah. When I use the word cheating loosely, because that's what we were told in school. Keep your eyes on your own paper.
Yeah. Right.
Don't look at their paper. Don't ask questions about what they're doing. Yeah. You need to do it yourself, right? Yeah. And it's crazy. That's not how the world works at all. I want to look at your paper, Darren. I want to look at your paper, Damon. I want to know what you're doing. I want you to show me your work and maybe I'll go that way or maybe I won't. But collaborative mindset is so much better and you can move so much further faster with a mindset of collaboration. So I'll use the word collaboration instead of cheater.
Or it's creativity. Do you know how the movie Alien was pitched to a studio?
No, tell me.
So it like back then, you know, it was high concept. You pitch it, and if the pitch is good, the movie's greenlit, right?
Right.
So Alien was Jaws in space. Jaws had just come out, it's a giant shark thing, but we're like, we'll just do Jaws in space. That's kind of the essence of creativity. You take something that exists and mash it up with something else, or just kind of like see it in a slightly new way, but it's still nothing new under the sun, which I think actually goes back to the Bible.
You guys ever see the movie Point Break?
Course.
Yeah, I love that movie.
So the original Point Break, if you run that movie right next to the first Fast and the Furious, they're the exact same movie, literally frame by frame. The car chases happen at the same time, the cop stuff, the romantic relationship, everything happens exactly the same between those two movies. Point Break was surfers. And Fast and the Furious was car thieves. It's amazing.
Glenn, I was just having this. I just went and saw Beekeeper with Jason Statham.
Yes.
You know, it is basically John Wick, a different version of John Wick. You know, there's the two things that happened to set something else off. It was a great movie. They're all great movies, but exactly.
So instead of a dog, it's bees.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So Glenn, I have to imagine that this would be true for you, but you know, a lot of what people are thinking about who come to the podcast, I think, are also professional development. And you've talked a lot about personal development and valuing that. Instead of when you talk about starting the day, it's not necessarily going get your focus time and do your work then, or eat the frog, do the hardest work. You're talking about a recipe for your own sort of wellness so that you have a springboard for the rest of the day that allows you to accomplish things. I guess what I'm talking about, do you think that spending this kind of attention on your personal life leads to that 800% professional growth? How do you balance these two things together?
Yeah, absolutely. Right. You have to continue to grow and develop as a leader, as an individual, in order to be able to properly lead others. And when we can properly lead others and we can teach them how to fish, then our businesses can be successful. So one of the principles in the legacy titles, the 12th principle actually, is to teach your people life skills, not just job skills. Yeah. And that really is the marinade for growing a business 800%, which I had the opportunity to do at a car dealership out here in Paris, Kentucky. We grew 800% in just under 6 years. And the real magic and chemistry to it was that we were developing people. We were growing as individuals, and then we were developing the people around us. So they were more successful, which made the business successful. Yeah. I have a lot of clients that own car dealerships, and they hire me for high-level masterminds and whatnot. And one of the very first thing that we teach them is for them to do the morning five routines, the very first thing that we teach. Then it also applies to how your business starts its day. A lot of businesses are slow starters. People kind of trickle in when they trickle in. People are grabbing their coffee. Maybe they're eating some breakfast in the morning. If you look at a lot of the ways a lot of businesses start, they don't get out the gate quick. And so that's something we talk about there too, is if you change the way you start your day, it makes a massive impact in your business. So how can you start your business every day where it injects people with energy and passion, and we can develop people first thing in the morning while their brains are fresh? And we use an acronym. I'm all about making things really simple. So we use an acronym called LEADD, which is L-E-A-D-D, L-E-A-D-D. And it stands for listen, encourage, advise, and develop daily. That's the extra D is daily.
Nice. Right? Yeah.
Encourage, advise, and develop, and do it daily. So morning meetings, for example, I teach my clients how to put together a daily morning meeting. And in that meeting, they're the first one in the room so they can listen to what their people have to say. Mm-hmm. Then they start the meeting by encouraging the behaviors they want to see more of. Right? Well, great job getting a Google review. Great job picking up trash in the parking lot. Great job closing three deals yesterday. Whatever behaviors I want to see more of, we encourage. Then we advise. hey, we need to work on this. We need to work on this. There's this going on. You need to work on this. You need to work on this. And then we develop, which is no one should ever walk out of your meeting not knowing something they didn't know walking in. That's the intention behind it, right? We want to develop the people. So whether we're developing them with wealth management or we're giving them sales skills or developing them on a product, whatever the development piece is, we want to make sure there's always a development piece. And when we do this daily, if we spend the first 30 minutes of our day as a business listening, encouraging, advising, and developing, dude, production goes through the roof all day long, man. It's amazing how it works. So these things apply in our personal lives, and they also apply into our business. And as we're developing ourselves and developing people, your business can't help but grow.
For leaders who are watching this, who wrote down all that, one question I have about those meetings is to ensure that something was learned, I guess, or they walk away for the development. Do you go around the room and ask people one takeaway or one thing that they're going to do differently or at the end of those meetings? How do they go from that meeting to take the action moving forward?
Yeah. So obviously interaction, having people included and getting takeaways, things like that is always great, right? We want a spirit of collaboration. With that said, it is the responsibility of the leader to make sure that we have planned. If you fail to plan, you plan to fail. So what is the plan for the year of development for your people? Now, sometimes when I say that, my clients will be like, whoa, I got to train people for a year. No, you got to train people for the next 20 years. But we're going to start with 1 year and let's break that down into 52 weeks.
Yeah.
So what are 52 things in your field, whatever field you're in, what are 52 things that you've learned along the way that were valuable for you as a leader in the organization that helped you be successful that you wish you would have known earlier or sooner, right? Now let's take those 52 things and we'll just train on one of them a week, every day in a different way. We might train on, say, for example, it's communication skills. I learned effective communication. You need intention. You need attention. Volume matters. The space, the distance, the velocity of your speech. All these things matter, right? I want to teach other people how to be effective communicators. So for 1 week, we're going to talk about effective communication. And on Monday, I'm going to have a video from YouTube on communication. Tuesday, we're going to do some role playing on communication. Wednesday, we might read some excerpts from a book on communication. Thursday, we're going to have a speaker come in and talk about communication, right? We're going to do it. We're going to teach it a little bit different each day. That way, somebody who learns visually can get it. Somebody who learns audibly can get it. Somebody who learns by writing stuff down can get it. But we're just talking about effective communication for a week. And if you have 52 of those themes throughout the year, now we as leaders are positioning them to be successful, to gain wisdom, to gain knowledge in a faster way than we ever did to receive it. And then we can use the feedback and the communication and so on and so forth to adjust. Maybe week 7, you've heard from your people that, well, we really need some help in this area. Okay, great. So we'll change that. So it's a combination of having a plan. Don't just wing it and expect everybody to give you what you need. Have a plan and then have some flexibility.
I really like the parts you talk about, the different modularity, because not everybody learns the same way. Some people love live instructor-led training. Some people learn by writing things down, other by reading books or watching videos. So
one of the things I learned, Damon, when I was working on being a more effective speaker from stage is I learned that there's all these different personality tests, but they all pretty much say the same thing. And that's that there's four kind of personality types, right? If you use the animal one, you've got sharks, dolphins, whales, and urchins. And your sharks are like, you know, the shark, right? Like the lawyer type, the go get it, the guy who's in the gym, you know, he's a shark. He just wants to get after it, right? Then you got like the whales that are like, save the world, hug the trees. We love everybody. Can't we all just get along? A lot of them live out there in California, right?
Oh, yeah.
And then you've got your dolphins, which are like, I'm pretty much a dolphin. So it's a social, let's party, let's have fun kind of personality. Your dolphins will always have a little bowl of candy on their desk because they want people to come talk to them, right? And then you've got your urchins, and your urchins are like your Excel spreadsheets, your data people. They just want the data, your accountants and the engineers. Those are all urchin personalities. So as I learned about these four, I realized, oh, okay, So if I want to be an effective speaker from a stage, I have to speak to all four personalities. And so what I do, I'll go to an event, I'll speak, there'll be 10,000 people in the audience. I'll go out before there's anybody there and I'll pick a chair on the left. I'll pick a chair here. I'll pick a chair here and I'll pick a chair there. And I'll put a shark in one seat and I'll put a dolphin in another seat. And I'll put an urchin and I'll put a whale. And I'll make sure that my delivery of my keynote hits all four personalities. And I'll talk to that one person that I made up is the shark when I'm doing sharky stuff, right? So like if I'm going to yell and be passionate and aggressive and rah, 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 then I'm talking to the shark. And then I'll walk over to the other side of the stage and I'll be like, so the data shows that sleep cycles are 2 to 3 hours. When I'm talking to the urchin or the, oh, you know, when I was homeless and people didn't feel seen or invisible, right? Like I'm talking to the whale. And so having an understanding that all those personality types are in the room and being conscious of that as you're setting up your training and giving yourself space and time to reach all those different personality types. It sounds like a lot of work, but it's really just basic, like, okay, I'm going to talk to the whale on Tuesday. I'm going to talk to the shark on Wednesday. I'm going to talk to the urchin on Thursday. And I'll talk to the dolphin on Friday. And by the end of the week, I've talked to everybody. And everybody feels seen, heard, and significant. And they're all walking away with something valuable.
That's awesome advice.
Thanks.
Glenn, I'm looking at the little clock there, realizing that we got to start wrapping this up.
We should probably do that.
I'm hoping you'll come back after you've learned some drumming and you can do a little drumming for us in addition to continue the conversation. There you go. Yeah,
I'm in.
In honor of lead with the develop, which is this idea you want to learn something new. So last question here for you, for our listeners. What is something that a lot of people might not know about you? Or might find surprising. Now, that's a little bit tough for you because you've shared a lot of stories and I think you're pretty much of an open book. But our listeners don't really know you. So maybe what's one more thing about you that people might find surprising?
I am currently on a journey of trying to figure out if the earth is round or not.
Does that mean you're going to travel the earth?
No, I'm just thinking about it. I've been thinking about it lately. Like my experience of the earth is one thing, but what I've been told is another thing. Yeah. And so I've been studying. I'm like, okay, so the earth is a globe, right? Who told me that? And is that real? Is that the truth? And it's funny because as I've been doing, you know, you do some research and you find some weird stuff, man. You find some weird stuff from NASA and moon landings and all this weird stuff. And there's no actual photographs of the Earth. They're all photoshopped by some guy. You just start finding out some weird stuff. And so something a lot of people don't know about me is that I'm not kidding at all when I say I'm at a point in my life where I am seeking to understand and literally questioning everything. So that's an interesting, you should hear some of the conversations with my kids right now.
I'll bet.
My kids are like, Dad, is Earth round? I'm like, well, let's talk about that. I don't really know the answer to that, but let's talk about that.
Well, I'm sure their teachers love you.
Oh, they've got to love me right now. Their mom's their teacher because she homeschools them, but they do have some co-op stuff. But yeah, you know, and I want them to question everything too, including me, because I don't know.
That's the path to knowledge, right? So one thing I think we don't want to question is this idea that we do hope you come back sometime. Glenn, how can people get a hold of you?
Just go to glennlundy.com. Or actually the best thing you could possibly do is go download the Morning Five. Go to themorningfive.com. It's free. You can download the ebook. It's a great way. It tells a little bit of my story, and then it also breaks down those five principles. And so if they find that valuable at that point, then come connect with me on glennlundy.com and we can go further. But I'd love to start off our relationship by adding value to your life and helping you change the way you start your day.
Glenn Lundy, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, man.
Okay, that's it for our podcast. Thanks everybody. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, awesome. Everybody.